from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to the Bear Advantage Multi On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com. I'm your host, J. Paul Jackson, and today I'm really lucky because not only do I have my co-host, Rocky LaFleur, along with me here in the Morgan City studios, but also we have as our guest host from way up in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, Mr. Nico Marcos, or the Greek Freak.
How are you guys doing?
Or the Big Papa. I like the Big Papa.
Big Papa. Yep.
How did you get that name, the Big Papa?
Man, I don't know if I should even talk about it, but yeah, it happened during college, and there might be my girlfriend might be offended if I talk about it on the air. So we'll just leave it at that.
We're gonna leave that totally alone. Well, for you guys out there listening, we're really glad to have Nico on board with us. And later in the podcast, we're going to be joined also by Sean Beakey. Now, both Sean and Nico are on the Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys Pro staff. And, of course, every podcast, as you know, is brought to you by the good people at Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys, makers of the most innovative and toughest gear out there for the hardcore waterfowler. We know it's not easy being hardcore. So, Nico, we're going to leave Big Papa alone and tell me about the Greek Freak now. I've also heard you called the Greek Freak.
Well, that one all started when the Milwaukee Bucks picked up a big, I think he's a power forward out of Greece. And they nicknamed him the Greek Freak. And so I think it was only fitting for everyone to start calling me the Greek Freak. So I think that that caught on as well. And I this guy that is that power forward for the Bucks also owns a Euro stand food truck, and so do I. So I the other day when I was at my last county fair, one of the Milwaukee Bucks guys came over to the Euro stand and grabbed a Euro, and I told him I wanted to have a cook-off with the Greek Freak himself. So hopefully that's in the making here, and I'll be having a Euro cook-off between the two. Do you guys know what Euros are? I know people south of the Mason-Dixon line don't really know what Euros are, so.
Yeah, and it's spelled G-Y-R-O. Explain that to me.
So Euro means around in Greek. And so you get this big old hunk of meat called a cone. You put it on a vertical broiler, and you cook it, and it spins around in a circle. So once the outer layer of it gets cooked, you take your knife and you cut the cooked part of the meat off, and you serve that on a pita bread and some tzatziki sauce, some onions and tomatoes.
Sounds good, man. It's lunchtime, too. Yes, I know what they are, because when I was in college at Mizzou, I had some good friends that had a Greek steakhouse. And in addition to steaks, that was their specialty. Rocky, have you ever had one?
I have not. My mouth's watering listening to you guys talk about it, though.
Yeah, it's good, that's for sure. My friends always try to convince me to bring out my big 26-foot trailer Euro stand out to the goose fields and make Euros for everyone in the slow times, but I need to find a big enough generator to power it.
And J-Paul said that you are a social media manager in your...
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got out of school, graduated from Missouri State, and I was lucky enough to have a internship at the Sportsman Channel the year prior. And so that year I graduated, they offered me a job as a social media coordinator over at Sportsman Channel. And so I worked there for 2 years managing all the social platforms for Sportsman Channel, as well as the digital assets, the blogs, and all that types of stuff. And then later on, my last 6-7 months, we started getting a lot more digital assets over from all the television shows. So I was in charge of handling all those. And then when they moved over to Denver, I decided to stick in Wisconsin, and I started working for a company called Bass Urban Advertising, where I'm doing pretty much the same thing with hunting and fishing companies, as well as some television shows. So, yeah, it's been good. I enjoy it. I get to play on Facebook every day. My boss can't yell at me for being on Facebook. So
maybe you can explain something to me. How in the world, you know how you're watching a video, like on Facebook or YouTube or wherever it may be, and the video will be going, you know, doing that stopping and starting every 5 seconds. It'll play a little bit and then it'll stop and it's reloading itself. But isn't it amazing when you're watching a video online and an advertisement comes up, it automatically just plays it crystal clear in HD?
I don't know what to tell you on that one. I think that's just
that is really pissed me off this morning.
Bill.
Yeah, it's just really, I was trying to watch a video of something online, and it's done it when I was listening to Pandora before. Pandora was in and out. I'm in the middle of nowhere in Mississippi, so you're lucky to have service, but it is amazing when it's time for an advertisement to come up. It is crystal clear, nonstop playing. So I thought maybe you had an answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because those ads are set in a format where they actually stream a little bit better than these bigger videos that show up on your newsfeed and stuff.
Because there's money connected to them, guys. It's all about the
conspiracy. It's all about the big bucks.
That's it. Now, in addition to being a social media guru, one of the reasons I was really excited about having you and Sean join us here in just a few minutes is because, you know, here on the X podcast powered by DuckSouth.com, we have a very southern tilt, and you know that's by default. I mean, we are all of us guys who host this, Rocky, Houston, Josh, and myself are southern guys, and you know we're powered by DuckSouth.com, one of the oldest waterfowling websites out there, but it's really good sometimes to have a different perspective. So you're from Wisconsin. Sean, who's going to be joining us in a minute, is from Michigan. And both of you guys I know are very, very serious waterfowlers. I mean, not only do you work with hunters and you know, through the Sportsman Channel and through the social media stuff you do now, but you travel pretty much all over the country duck hunting and goose hunting every year, don't you, Nico?
Yeah, I try to get around everywhere, as long as my girlfriend doesn't get too mad at me. But I worked out a deal this year where I give her 1 weekend a month. We'll plan a little trip or something, and the rest of the time she can't say anything to me about it. So luckily I got a couple of trips planned. Going to North Dakota here in a few weeks. We're going down to Kansas and possibly Louisiana this year. But yeah, I've been all over the place, and it's fun being able to meet new people and experience different types of hunts. And a few years ago was my first time experiencing flooded timber hunting, which was pretty cool. Always wanted to do it, and finally I was able to with a couple buddies.
So where did you go hunting in green timber at?
We went down in, I believe it was Arkansas County, if that's correct. It was close to Stuttgart, with a buddy of mine, Brian Womack, at High Plains Waterfowling. It's a Christian-based outfit. It was a cool experience, and he's got a lot of cool property out there. And the first flock that came in, I didn't even pick up my gun. I just sat there and soaked it all in. There's nothing. I couldn't find anything that could match up to seeing a wad of mallards dump into flooded timber. It's almost as good as a raft of coots coming in your decoys.
Hey, Big Papa, I got a question for you.
Yep.
Everybody that I've met from, you know, north of the Mason-Dixon line, they have a passion for shooting geese. If I told you you could wake up tomorrow and shoot a limit of mallards or a limit of geese, which would you prefer?
Geese for sure, as long as it wasn't in Wisconsin.
Really?
The simple fact that Wisconsin, you can only shoot two birds after early season. So unless I have a field loaded up with 15 guys, I'd rather shoot my geese in Kansas any day of the week.
Why do you like geese better than ducks?
I don't know if it's the fact that, I mean, when we get ducks in Wisconsin in these fields, it gets stupid. They forget anything they've ever learned in life, and you put out six spinners, and you could put out a bunch of garbage bags for all you want, and they just dump right in. There's not much to it when it comes to hunting dry fields for mallards up by us. With geese, especially around here, I mean, you drive within 15 miles, and every fourth field has a group of hunters on it. So it's a very challenging out by me, because it's a lot of urban goose hunting, too. And we're talking, these farmers out here don't have hundreds of acres. They have 40-acre farms everywhere. So getting permission on these properties is more of a challenge than even hunting them.
Is there a certain specific goose that you would prefer to hunt?
Oh, I love Canada's. Big old giant ganders. They're always fun. I enjoy those a lot. And it's fun, especially late season when you start getting those migrators coming down. And that's a great time when you can get a flock of ganders coming from the heavens dropping down into your spread. There's nothing better than that, that's for sure.
Yeah, I got to say that, particularly over water, I really, really like hunting Canada geese over water, because they cup and come in. And for most of us in the South, you know, it's just the opposite. When we have geese, they're stupid. I mean, we can, you know, work them. I hunt a lot on the Mississippi River, and we still get a few every winter migrating. And if you hear a goose, all you got is pick up your can of call and start talking to them, and you're going to get them in. The ducks, on
the
other hand.
Send me the GPS coordinates to that.
it's very different. I mean, I've hunted from Canada to Mexico, and as you move down the flyway, the geese get easier and the ducks get tougher. There's no doubt about it. But I really like hearing, you can always tell when you're talking to a guy from the northern part of the flyway also, because I like hearing you call them Canada geese. Down here, where we don't get a lot of them, you know, you'll hear guys talk about, yeah, we shot a bunch of ducks and we even killed three Canadians. Well, for those of you guys listening,
that's
Southerners,
murder.
Yeah, exactly. They're not Canadian geese. They're Canada geese.
I did that in South Dakota a couple of years ago, and the guy looked at me and said, really? You killed three Canadians?
Yep. Yep.
I was with you on that trip.
Running joke.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I got my education. I've got to tell off on myself, though. In the late 90s, on my very first trip to Canada, I was in Saskatchewan hunting with a group of friends, and we'd split into two groups because we'd found two really good fields, and we had permission for both of them. We thought it'd be easier to hide with less people. So our group had five, and the other group had four. You can kill eight, and we got our 40 Canada geese in no time, and we'd come back into the little town of St. Walburg, Saskatchewan, had a cafe called Ike's, and the old man that owned it, Ike, has passed on, but it was packed. And when our buddies came in after us, of course, I've got the big mouth. So, you know, they're, hey, how'd y'all do? And, you know, oh, man, it was awesome. We killed 40 Canadians in 30 minutes. And the old man that owned the cafe, Ike, was pouring coffee at the table beside me, and he never even turned his head to look at me. All he said was, hey, Yank, shoot all the damn Canada geese you want to, but leave the frickin' Canadians alone. So from that point on, I've never made that mistake again. But, you know, it's one that gets made plenty of time.
You know, another thing I thought was pretty cool about when we were in South Dakota was people use gravy like we use ketchup in the South.
Something further out west.
Because it had to be.
I had my first biscuits and gravy when I moved down to Missouri. I always just thought it was the grossest thing in the world, and I've tried them once before up here, and I moved down there, and my buddy, his mom made me biscuits and gravy one morning after working on the alpaca farm that they had, and I was like, holy moly, what was I missing out on? So that, in Wisconsin, you don't really get a good biscuits and gravy.
Well, I think what Rocky was referring to, though, is if you go up in Dakotas or Canada, I mean, anywhere in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta, if you order French fries, they'll ask you.
Oh yeah,
if you
boudin.
Want,
what is that? What's that called on there?
Boudin. But they'll also ask you if you want gravy or American sauce, because an American sauce, by the way, is what they call ketchup in certain areas of Canada. But instead of ketchup as a condiment for French fries, generally through the Dakotas and up into Canada, they use gravy just like we put on our biscuits in the morning. They put on their fries in the afternoon.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously,
man,
that's not a Wisconsin thing.
No, if we got cheese curds. Cheese curds is our thing. Fried cheese curds and regular cheese curds, squeakier the better.
You know, Nico, I've had a ton of people. I own a guide service here in Mississippi, and I've had a ton of people hunt with me from Wisconsin. And I would have to say that people from Wisconsin are some of my favorite people. I mean, how they got displaced in the North, I'll never know. But they're especially the ones that hunt, you know, they are just involved in hunting. They are just really, really good people. In 20 years of being a duck guide, I actually got my largest tip ever from a customer from Wisconsin. And
really?
he came to the South just to kill a pintail, and it was his last day, last afternoon. He said, look, you put me on a pintail, I'll give you $800. Okay. So
wow.
We snuck up a levee and we got him a pintail, and man, he counted. I'll never forget him counting those $100 bills and putting them in my hand. That was outside of him paying me for that hunt.
Oh, so, man. You did a sneak like we do on snow geese for a pintail for an $800 tip, Rocky LaFleur?
Heck yeah.
What you'll do for a buck.
Right.
Oh, man, I cannot wait for the guys on the Duck South Forum to get a hold of that. Please, 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 somebody, one of you listeners, start a thread about Rocky doing a sneak on a pintail for $800. That's amazing to me, brother.
Yeah, you've never seen a fat
that.
Boy.
There you go.
You have never seen a fat boy crawl that lightly. To sneak up on
man,
a pintail.
I never
this
crawl,
guy.
I just roll.
Hey, and we've got a question for you too that we've got to get to at the end of our podcast here also. But right now, since we have moved the subject matter back to ducks, we need to bring on Sean Beakey. Now, Sean is not only a member of the Hardcore Pro staff, but he also is a duck hunting guide, and he's going to give us perspective from Michigan to go along with yours, Nico, from Wisconsin. For a lot of us down here in the South, you know, not everybody gets to travel up north, and not everybody has the same.
I'm telling Jay Paul, I mean, most people think he's a Yankee because he lives in Dyersburg, Tennessee. This
Watch out! Ooh, that hurts.
Some of these people have never left.
Welcome to the team, brother.
North of Memphis. So, Jay Paul. Anyway, he didn't like that
Memphis.
When I told him that.
No, I didn't at all. I take great pride in being a Southerner. But you know what? I am kind of, it's kind of like one of my buddies who came from a little town south of New Orleans. And a lot of people don't realize that there's still even landform south of New Orleans, but there is. But, you were from way up north if you were from Baton Rouge. And right there, I think that I heard the ding. Sean Beakey, welcome to the On the X podcast powered by DuckSouth.com. And you're on here with
our buddy Nico Marcos, your fellow hardcore pro staffer, and my co-host, Mr. Rocky LaFleur.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, man,
yeah, it's good to have you, Sean.
Finally, the tides are even now. Two Yanks against a couple Southerners.
And actually, Rocky wanted to have you on from the very beginning, and I said, oh, heck no. No, we're not going to do that. We're gonna have the upper hand for at least a few minutes.
Yeah, I did. I said, we just need to bring everybody on board from the beginning of the show. So, and J-Paul's like, no, let's break them down one by one. Have them all one at a time.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, we finally reached a compromise that we would just let you come in a little bit later on your lunch break there and keep Nico on with us at the same time. But we are glad to have both you guys here because, you know, we were just saying before you joined us, Sean, that there are a lot of people in the South that never, you know, get to hunt even north of Memphis for guys in Mississippi, which is where a big part of our base is with DuckSouth.com. And there are a lot of misconceptions also about the North that we want to touch on with you guys. But the first thing, starting with you, Sean, because I know you've been blue-winged till hunting, how about giving us a duck report? What's it look like there in western Michigan where you're at?
Well, we just finished up our third and final season of our experimental season. And, with great success. I just talked with one of the biologists up here, and they just did a count on the last day of the season, and they had 16 shots fired, and not at one non-target species. So talking to all the guys up here, it sounds like the experimental season is going to be a go next year. I mean, the way they're looking at it right now. But as far as our season went, ours actually started on September 1st and wrapped up the 7th. And during the season, typically, in years past, our blue wing are coming through pretty thick in that first week. And this year, they actually pushed through a bit later. I think it's a lot to do with the warmer temps that we've had across the whole northern hemisphere this year, you know, in North America. And, you know, that contributed a lot to the later push through. And I'm just now hearing, actually, guys shooting birds last weekend during our youth season. They have a special two-day youth season up here. And this last weekend, the majority of the birds taken were blue-winged teal. And that's one thing also, that during that two-day season, they can shoot any, you know, legally harvested waterfowl, legally targeted waterfowl, you know. So all duck species are legally to be taken by youth, and the majority were blue-winged teal.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize, we take it for granted down here that, you know, the blue-winged teal season and the wood duck season, or early duck season as a lot of people call it. But for you guys, this was only the third year that it's been implemented, and it sounds like from what you're telling me, it's going to become, a standard.
Yeah, and talking to other guys, you know, I talk to the DNR quite often with my guide service. I'm in contact with the DNR, you know, kind of a give and take, you know, question off one another, you know, and so I have quite a bit of contact, and, you know, it sounds like it's going to be a goal. It's not for sure, you know, because they still have to vote on it and have their meeting, but it sounds like it's going to be a goal for next year, so.
Cool. Well, we really enjoy it down here. Unfortunately, we haven't seen a lot of birds. It sounds like, from what you've been telling me, that they're just now really starting to migrate. I know we had a little push with the cold snap over the weekend, but still, it wasn't the numbers when I actually went out in the field that I expected to see. You think there's still a lot up around in your area?
Oh, yeah. I scout right now for early goose is still going on. Our early goose season got extended through the 25th of September this year, so I still scout every day. And I'm right now really starting to see the teal numbers kind of peak right now. And typically, you know, I'm seeing teal numbers peak sometimes even before season opens up here, the last weekend of August right in that ballpark. And, you know, so you're looking a couple weeks late right now, so.
So how's the goose numbers by you there, Sean? Because out by me, it's been getting few and far between. I mean, there's a couple groups of guys. I just had a buddy send me a text message. They're actually hunting a polo field, and they shot their four-man limit of birds. But I've been scouting every day myself, and the Canadas have not been migrating down. Granted, I'm in southeastern Wisconsin. I don't know how far north you are up there, Sean, but for me, it seems like there's not much moving in the last week or so pertaining to the geese.
Actually, we've got so many resident geese here that we've got steady numbers of birds, you know, from September through February. And really the only time that a resident geese push out is if we get a really, really hard freeze, like a hard winter. And, you know, that's evident in some of the bird banding projects. So, you know, during late season, we'll harvest some birds that get banded. You know, they're banded in northern Kentucky, Ohio, you know, southern Ohio, and they've been banded in, say, February. And you could tell it corresponds with a really hard up, you know, hard freeze up years. And so we have a lot of good, I mean, solid numbers of birds all year round. And then we get influxes of migratory birds. And I'm just starting to hear over there on the Saginaw Bay area, they're starting to see some, actually last weekend during that youth season, I saw some migrators taken, and they were banded up in the northern James Bay population area there. So I know they're starting to move in. The giant do start moving in right now. It's about the same time of year, so it sounds about right. But we have so many geese here, residents. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of resident geese, and all over southwest Michigan, central Michigan. It's all agricultural ground and a lot of lakes. And so we just hold birds year-round here.
All right. So, Sean, do you guys, out by me at least, the DNR have been rounding up birds and actually either relocating them or killing them themselves? There's a place about 40 minutes west, east of where I am, and it used to be loaded with birds. And all the people in the community were complaining because there's so much goose crap around and the whole nine yards, so they actually rounded them up and relocated some and actually killed some. Do you guys have that problem out by you?
And actually, we don't. The DNR, there's quite a few waterfowl hunters in our area. And the one thing is, too, in our area, that you'll have your urban areas, but they're not continuous urban areas. So you'll have one urban area surrounded by a rural area, you know, open cropland and you know, even the residential areas, you know, that have larger piece of property with grassland or grassy, you know, yards. They're pretty good about letting you hunt. There's a pretty good, you know, attitude around here towards hunters. And so the DNR hasn't had to do anything like that, implement anything like that yet. Over by Detroit, they were, you know, considering some of that, but all the waterfowlers kind of stepped up and, you know, had some input on that, and so that never happened. And so our Canada numbers actually have been kind of in check for the past few years. Actually, you know, are kind of tapered off, or flat, and they're not out of hand. You know what I mean? So things are actually pretty good around here right now.
Hey, and I want to move on to ducks too. I want to get a duck report from both of you guys, what you're hearing. But first, I want to make a comment on this. I've got some experience with this down here in Tennessee. And actually, for us, relocation is generally done by the USDA. And for those of our listeners who don't know exactly what we're talking about, it started in the north, but it's becoming a major problem in the south. And that is urban Canada geese, resident geese. They're usually graders. And I know that around Milwaukee, around the greater Chicago area, in some parts around the Detroit area there, on the eastern side of the state. I know you're around Battle Creek, and I don't know really what it's like there, Sean, but in a lot of areas up north, for some time, there's been an early goose season that's mostly targeting residential geese because of the problems that they cause. But we're also seeing that same phenomenon here in the South, particularly on golf courses and parks. You know, geese love Bermuda grass. And it's funny, about 3 or 4 years ago, I got a call from a guy with the USDA,
and I actually thought it was a prank because he left me a message that said, hey, I just trapped a whole bunch of Canada geese. I'm looking for a place to turn them loose. There's an early goose season, September 1st. All these birds are banded. And if you want to have a place we can release them in your area so you can shoot them, you know, we just got to move them and that's it. And I thought, man, you got to be kidding. But he called me back a couple days later because I didn't even return the phone call and found out that it was for real. And since then, we've established a relationship, and now we have you know, quite a few resident Canadas, you know, here in rural West Tennessee, which is better suited than the cities. But it's a problem all over, and so hopefully I gave a little education to the guys that are listening that aren't familiar with that here in the South. What I wanted to ask you, though, Nico, is are you sure it's your DNR or is it USDA? And also, you said they actually destroyed some. Are you certain of that, or is that just what you've heard?
That is what I've heard from a friend that specifically hunts over in that area. And I have seen for sure on the lakes around by me, they actually they put some type of liquid over these geese eggs themselves during the spring too, so they won't hatch. And so I couldn't say I'm 100% sure that they're killing them. I mean, it's from a good friend of mine who's a good source, and he's always in contact with the DNR out by him. He's the guide in that area specifically. So it's interesting to hear these things and to see our resident geese population being reduced. And, you know, it's the areas where a lot of these resident geese are areas that are a lot, you know, it's a richer community area, and these people do not like the geese at all, but don't let people hunt either. So the DNR, whoever's having to step up and make these decisions to do these things.
Yeah, well, I know down here it's the USDA, and I was told that they can't destroy them because they are, even though they're residents, Canada goose is a federal migratory bird. I'll have to do some looking into that, but it definitely is a problem, you know, that we're seeing all around, and it's certainly spreading to the South here. Of course, for us, it's pretty cool because it's giving us some hunting opportunities that we didn't have before. But, you know, for you guys up there where the resident populations are just so big and in urban areas where you can't hunt them, I can see how it can be a pretty major problem. Well, Sean, you talked about the geese. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing with the ducks. Has any type of migration started at all other than the blue wings coming in a little late?
I'm not really seeing any really migration starting yet. You know, so there's quite a few resident mallards and black ducks and wood ducks in this area. I'm seeing a lot of them right now. You know, obviously they're all in their kind of summer colors. They're just starting to get their fall or, you know, breeding plumage just starting. And but I'm seeing good numbers. I think we had a really good hatch round here this year. We had a really kind of dry earlier summer, and then it got wet. You know, a little bit later on during the typical dry season, I actually got, you know, wet around here. So, I think, you know, those nests actually hatched out at the right time, and, I'm seeing lots of good numbers of birds. So, but as far as migration goes, not really anything. Like I said, I'm hearing, you know, early counts of, birds hitting the Saginaw Bay area, you know, geese coming down from like the St. James Bay area. But that's about it.
How about you, Nico?
Yeah, piggybacked on what he was saying, I've seen a really good number of mallards out by us, resident mallards, ones hatched out by us here. This is probably the first time in, I don't know, 2 to 3, 4 years that I've actually seen hundreds of mallards in wheat fields, which out by us, you usually don't see that. I think it had a lot to do with a lot of that rain we got in the last couple of weeks where they've been feeding and drinking in the same fields, a lot of sheet water over these wheat fields. And I was super surprised to see these giant flocks of mallards dumping into these wheat fields. Usually we'll get wood ducks to do that, but never the amount of mallards that I've been seeing. So it looks like it's going to be a great waterfowl season for us down here as well.
That's really cool. You know, a lot of people also don't realize that there in Wisconsin, you actually are in part of the breeding grounds. I mean, there are, you know, it's not just limited to the prairies of the Dakotas. There is significant duck production every year in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Yep, and especially along the Mississippi River there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys something. This is Rocky. I'm going to jump in and ask a question.
When you guys hunt ducks there, what is the most common way that you hunt them? Is it dry field hunting? Is it just shallow ponds? Do you hunt them on the lakes up there? I mean, you know, from somebody from here, from Mississippi, you know, that, you know, we all have the love of hunting waterfowl, but it's done different in so many different areas. So, I mean, what's the most common way you guys hunt ducks up there?
Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to live in an area in Michigan. It's Berry County is where I'm centered, and it holds more bodies of water or inland lakes than any other county in the state. And I kind of call it the prey pothole region of Michigan. It's kind of a good way to put it. There's a lot of agricultural ground up there, and then there's surrounded CRP areas also. And almost every field you come across in my area has got at least one or two little ponds or you know, vernal ponds or ponds that are year-round, you know, and all these ducks and waterfowl, like geese and ducks, use those areas to nest. So I'm fortunate in that regard. But there's just so many different opportunities of waterfowl to hunt, too, and types of hunting. We hunt those potholes, you know, out of box blinds or hunting out of the edges. And then we hunt the fields for ducks and geese. There's lakes. I would say lakes are about, you know, no more than 5 miles apart, and they're pretty good-sized lakes, you know, close to 200-acre lakes, you know, so you can get on those lakes, and a lot of them have public and private property, so you can legally hunt those lakes. So you've got those open bodies of water, larger inland lakes, and so we hunt with layout boats and tender boats and hunt diving ducks off the bigger bodies of water, and then the Great Lakes, and so you can hunt the sea ducks, the divers, and then you get black ducks, and you get puddle ducks out there too. But, you know, really, and that's one thing, too. I have a guide service up here. It's Beakey's Blackjack Guide Service. And we focus on every type of waterfowl hunting. And it's exciting, you know, it gives guys a chance to kind of focus on, you know, every little aspect of hunting. But I'd like to bring up one thing that I know is different from kind of guys down south as far as waterfowl hunting and kind of the temperament, or not really temperament, but idea of when your better days are to go hunting. And I've hunted down in Arkansas, you know, and the guys down there go, man, you know, I'd like to have a sunny day today. Man, it'd be great if we had a sunny day today to hunt the birds, you know, hunting flooded timber. And up here, you know, my favorite day is like November, December, early December, with like a 20-mile-an-hour southwest wind or northwest wind, and some sleet, and about like 38, 40 degrees. That is my favorite day right there. And whether it be a field, open water hunting, but open water hunting, definitely a really nasty, cloudy day is my favorite.
So you even prefer a cloudy, nasty day if you're hunting out of the layout boats?
Actually, I prefer the nasty days out of layout boats. And the reason being is, you know, waterfowl, let's say they fly over the top of a lake. You know, you look down, you know, a topographical map will kind of give the same view or idea. But those bodies of water are dark. And a layout boat is painted a gray, bay gray color. And so from right straight above on a sunny day, that boat stands out like a sore thumb. On a really nasty gray day, the ducks fly closer to the water, and the color of the water actually reflects that gray color of the sky. So you blend in really well. And typically when it's nasty and windy, the divers are moving more. And if you put your boats in the right location, you know, compared to a sunny day, the cloudy days you do much better on typically. And then you add motion to your spread with different things to kind of get their attention. Really, you're using large numbers of decoys to get their attention. You're not looking for the sun, you know, to kind of get their attention or get that, you know, to catch the movement. You're going with sheer numbers of decoys and being in the right location.
Hey, guys, this is something I've always been interested in. Down here in Mississippi, we get a large number of bluebills. I know that's probably hard to believe, but we have a large number of bluebills because in the area that I'm in, there's a ton of what we call farm-raised catfish, and these bluebills love these catfish ponds. And it's one of my favorite ducks to shoot. But I've always wondered, bluebills are a real hardy duck. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're kind of like a Canada goose or a mallard. They can tolerate a lot more weather than other ducks can.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely cold hardy. Yeah, they're probably one of the hardiest ducks I would say there is.
You know, last year we didn't hardly see a bluebill at all. So my question to you is, what does it take to push? Because bluebills nest and raise their young, you know, in your area. What does it take to push those birds south?
Ice.
Oh, yeah. If you remember, not last winter, but the winter before, we had kind of one of the coldest winters on record up here in the Great Lakes region. And the Great Lakes, like Lake Michigan, froze over 100%, if you can believe it. And so when that happened, I'm
wow.
sure you guys can remember, you know, they were taking pictures of Old Squaw down in Kentucky and in southern Ohio there on the Ohio River and the Mississippi River. They're getting pictures of Old Squaw. And those birds all came off the Great Lakes. They all froze out and came south.
Wow. Yeah, Rocky and I got a little bit, as you mentioned, Old Squaw. They call them longtails out west, but Rocky and I got a little dose of that layout hunting out of pumpkin seed layouts on the Great Salt Lake a couple of years ago. And shooting those divers, those bluebills, in that situation is something that a lot of guys will never get to experience. But I know Rocky, you know, watching you that day, it was like a kid opening presents on Christmas morning. You seemed to really get a kick out of it.
Yeah, I had a great time, all except my feet. And I'm a size 15 shoe, and those boats are made for about a size 12 or smaller, you know, because you stick your feet straight up in the air, and I could never get my feet straight. I had to kind of, what would you say, kind of bow-legged, and your feet are kind of out, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, pigeon-toed, that's it.
Yeah, you got to either be crow-footed or pigeon-toed when you're laying in them, for sure, when you got those big old boats like you've got, brother. I mean, shoes. I mean, feet.
But, you know, bluebills, I love bluebills. I would love one of these days. I'm going to make that trip up there to hunt them where they begin their rite of passage down the migration down the flyway. I'm going to come up. I'm going to make that trip up there because I just enjoy them. They are so fun to decoy. They react to calls almost like mallards when I was a young kid. You know, it was nothing to go out and shoot ducks in the South 25, 30 years ago. They just reacted to calls and just came to it. And then to watch the man, they're just such a gorgeous bird. I actually call them a miniature mallard, you know, because if you, you know, hold the head just right in the light, you see that green, the green color, and just the way they react to calls, it just reminds me of being a kid shooting mallards growing up. It's just an awesome bird. I love to shoot them and canvasbacks.
I can tell you, anybody that would like to try it, Sean is definitely the guy to call with his Blackjack Guide Service there in Michigan. He does a whole lot of hunting for divers. And up there, you know, in your area, Sean, the diver is kind of king. I know you and I are going to be this weekend at the Point Mouillet Waterfowl Festival. And anybody listening in that's going to be in the Detroit area this weekend, Sean and I will be at Point Mouillet. It is a very, very famous area for waterfowlers there in Michigan. They have a great waterfowl festival every year. My friend Dick Whitwam, I believe, is the chairman and the old River Wolf himself and has been for several years. And I've actually been up there and hunted divers on Lake Erie with Dick off of the River Wolf. And if you've never done it, you need to get in contact with Sean because it is definitely a blast. It's something completely different. You know, you may not be your cup of tea, but it's something that everybody ought to try to experience at least one time. And I've got some buddies that have done it, and not only did they like it, they liked it so much that they've purchased pumpkin seed layouts, and they're going to try to do a little layout boat hunting here in the South. And I believe it's possible. I can't wait to see how they experiment.
Oh,
guys,
yeah, definitely. I'm sure it'll work well. So,
Sean, how do they get in touch with you about a guided hunt? Do you have a website, phone number that you could give us?
Yeah, I actually have a few ways you can get a hold of me. I have a phone number. It's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. It's 269-209-9207. I have a website. It's www.beekbusters.com. That's B-E-E-K, busters.com. And Facebook, I have a Facebook page on there, Beaky's Blackjack Guide Service. You can message me there. I also have Twitter and a Instagram page also. So there's several ways to get a hold of me.
I heard you also have a Tinder account too.
Yeah, I don't think my wife would go for that one, but
nice shot, yeah, Nico.
That was pretty good. I'm reloading.
One thing I'd like to add,
though,
while we're talking about it is you know, we do the diver hunts out of layout boats, but what's becoming really popular up here with me, especially, I'm kind of you know, pushing this. It's a new thing is hunting geese out of layout boats up here, and I've been doing really well with it. You know, some of the guys that are from different parts of the country that don't see a lot of Canada geese, this gets them in your face. And one advantage to the layout boats over the field blinds is geese kind of go to water for refuge, or, you know, or to get away from the pressure. You know, a lot of guys hunt these fields, and so I'll hunt some of these pressured areas on purpose with layout boats because those pressured birds will go to water. And so we have a really good time with that. You know, it's typically a little bit warmer weather, you know, so we're hunting early season, like goose season here in September, and then early October when the divers haven't quite really fired up yet. You know, we're getting the geese too, you know, all the layout boats. And we shoot a fair number of puddle ducks out of layout boats. I mean, we shot some of the best looking wood duck drakes last year in my bluebill spread last year. So you just never know what you're going to get up here. You know, it's a really good time. So
that's pretty cool, man. I tell you, I look forward to seeing you this weekend up there too. And maybe we can sneak off on Sunday morning. My buddy Joe Robinson, who's going to be with us, head waterfowl biologist for the Michigan DNR. We're going to have him on the podcast with us Sunday, and maybe we can sneak out and do a little hunting Sunday morning early before the festival begins. Guys, we're about to run out of time here. I want to remind everybody that the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com, is brought to you by Bear Animal Health, makers of Advantage Multi, the only 100% effective heartworm preventative on the market in the Mississippi River Valley. And we really appreciate their support. And, of course, as a dog trainer, they're a great product. Before I ask Rocky to chime in here and give his closing thoughts, Nico, I have one question for you. Since you do have a food truck and you're a hunter, when you're out there in the field, what's your favorite snack? If I look in your blind bag, what food am I going to find?
Man, that's a tough question. It's usually whatever Quick Trip has at their gas station there. I'm usually a good fan of the egg muffins. Maybe sometimes I'll sneak in a little tzatziki sauce in the bag where I can dip my egg muffins into it.
What kind of sauce?
Tzatziki sauce. So for you,
what the hell is that?
People, it's cucumber sauce. You put it on your gyros. The white sauce, it's really good.
Yeah.
You can put it on anything. You know, most people, you know, you ever seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and they put Windex and all the stuff. Well, Greek people put the tzatziki sauce in all their stuff, like the ketchup,
you know,
of the South.
Recently, Gatorade came out with some cucumber lime flavor, and I tried it back during duck season. Somebody had a bottle of it in their blind bag, and I was thirsty, and it was out of water. And I took one sip of that and just sprayed it all over the front of the duck blind because it was so freaking horrible. I think I'll pass on the tzatziki sauce. I'm not sure that I could stand anything with cucumber. Now, the egg muffin, that's a different deal. I kind of like the egg muffin, but I knew there was going to be something food-wise in there. Well,
when
Nico,
you get as Sean, big and strapping as myself, you got to have something like that in your bag.
You know, Nico, you played college soccer, so I can't imagine, you know, you being too terribly huge.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, I worked out 6 days a week, and as soon as I realized I like hunting more than soccer, I stopped working out. So it added on real quick. It's all right. I'm happy the way I am now. I get to duck hunt all the time, and I don't need to worry about working out.
the Greek Freak. Well, man, we were really glad to have you, Sean. I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend there at the Waterfowl Festival at Point Mouillet, and I want to thank you for joining us and giving us some insights on what's going on there in the Michigan area with waterfowl. And Rocky, brother, your final thoughts, final comments to close us out here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed having you guys. I mean, it's so cool to learn in different areas, different parts of the United States about how other waterfowlers hunt, how they do their thing. And I just appreciate you guys coming on and sharing those thoughts today, because like I said, I know you guys have a love for the bluebills. So do I. I love those little bluebills. So thank you guys.
Well, thank you very much.
Not a problem, man.
And shovelers. Don't leave out the shoveler, Rocky, your favorite bacon. Bird.
Shovelers and bluebills.
Down the Hollywoods.
Right. And
nothing
bacon.
Wrong with it.
Amen. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. We hope everybody out there listening has really enjoyed this edition of the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.